Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 180. Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Hey, Richard Ryerson here. Thanks so much for tuning into the show. Hey, keep those emails coming. I love hearing from you. Thanks for all the support, all the fans out there. If you got a question about leadership, if you're having a leadership challenge, let me hear about it. I love to answer your questions. I might even answer it on the air if it's a pertinent one I think the whole audience can benefit from. But let me hear from you. I love the support that you're giving to me. And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a rating and review. It does so much for the support and the visibility. That's all I ask for you to listen to this great free content. And again, thank you for your support. Hey, I want to introduce my brand new partners to the show, 99 Designs. And when I was starting out on this entrepreneur path, I stressed about the graphic design element, the web design elements. You know, I want to encourage you to go check out 99 Designs because working with an individual graphic designer can be good, but it has its limitations. You know, timing is one thing. If you want dozens of designs to choose from in just 7 days, well, I encourage you to visit 99designs.com/leadership and get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. Go check them out. Well, I'm absolutely excited to finally have Carrie Lorenz on my show. She has learned what fearless leadership means in some of the most demanding and extreme environments imaginable. She, in the cockpit of the F-14 and the flight deck of an aircraft carrier, here her teams had to perform at their peak. Lives were on the line. Faltering leadership was simply unacceptable. Through those experiences, Lorenz identified a fundamental truth that high-performing teams requires fearless leaders. Since leaving the Navy, she's translated those lessons into a new field, helping top business leaders from Fortune 500 executives to middle managers supercharge performance in today's competitive business environment. She's got a brand new book coming out called Fearless Leadership, and she's here to talk about it on the show. Carrie, fellow Gold Wing aviator, glad to have you on the show. Welcome to Dose of Leadership.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, the listeners should know that you and I have tried, what was it, 4 or 5 times to connect, and the universe has prevented us in so many ways, but finally, we've slayed that dragon. We're here to give everybody our lessons on leadership, specifically your lessons, so I'm so glad we connected.
All right, yeah, let's do it.
So, you and I almost, we share a lot of common interests and common experiences. We were both naval aviators. You were in the Navy, I was in the Marine Corps. Sorry for your decision, you know, one thing that, but you went to the F-14, the first, or tell me about that. How was that in the early 90s, being one of the first female F-14 fighter pilots?
Well, as you can imagine, it was filled with some really extraordinary challenges and some surprises. But whether you are one of the first to choose something or break a glass ceiling or do something slightly more innovative or a different way, I think it's the similarities are definitely there and the challenges remain the same no matter if you are male or female. Insofar as that the cockpit of an F-14 certainly was one of the most demanding environments on Earth, and it clearly is where I learned some of my most unforgettable lessons, not just about flying, but also about life and definitely about leadership. But one of the things I certainly cover in my book, Fearless Leadership, is that journey to the cockpit and what it takes, how you do that when you decide to pursue what is seemingly an impossible dream that has really a ton of challenges and trials. And what I try to do is really distill some of those insights that I gained during that time and since leaving the military.
You know, one of the things I think important for the listeners to know that, put that in the time frame and the perspective, now it's kind of old hat, I think. It's kind of commonplace. But even back in the early 90s, I remember there's a huge debate about, you know, you're going into a really male-dominated section of the Navy, you know, flying fighter jets. What was it like, and contrast it with, and how has it changed even today? Talk to me about some of those challenges.
Well, I came to it a little bit naively, if you will. You know, we were joking about that you were a Marine Corps aviator and I was in the Navy.
Right.
My dad was actually a Marine Corps aviator.
Yes.
So I grew up as the daughter of a Marine. So and they didn't. The Marines didn't allow women to fly.
Yeah,
at that
you're right.
So it wasn't even an option for me. But I grew up with an older brother who was just a year older than me in Wisconsin. And so the way that I was raised was not very where we had these really tight gender roles, as in, you know, if we wanted a snowmobile, if the snowmobile needed, you know, gas in it or it needed new claws on the track, well, you went out and you just took care of business. It wasn't, well, that's a boy's job. You go inside and fold some laundry and I'll go take care of your snowmobile for you. So really, when I started flying, I knew that there was some conversation about whether or not women could fly, and I was already starting to get a sense of some pushback going, hey, nobody does that. Why would you want to do this? And yeah, I just kind of came at it, again, impossibly naively so at the time, and I don't get it. The jet doesn't know the difference.
Right.
Why is this such a big deal?
Right.
So I'm like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to work my tail off, and let's see what happens. It was a bit of an eye-opener, and there were definitely some people that I ran across, even early on, who were not supportive of that decision, of my decision to fly, and kind of looking at me going, why would you even want to do this? Why, there aren't any girls here. Why would you want to do this? And I'm like, well, why do you want to fly?
Because
it's cool, right? Why would that be any different for me? Now, since that time, and I was one of the first women, actually, when the Secretary of Defense lifted the combat exclusion clause, I was the first one to go right from the training command right into a combat aircraft. So my path was the same as every other guy that I was flying with. I didn't skip ahead. I didn't get inserted in as a fill-in or anything like that. So my path was the same. But there were definitely some challenges there. It's a culture that has very strong traditions, and there were some differences in opinion on whether or not integration or bringing women in was a good thing. I think over the course of time, what's proven to be shown is that women can fly very effectively and are making significant contributions, not only in the Navy, but in the Air Force and the Marine Corps as well, and certainly in the Army. So the Navy still would be probably better served if their numbers were a little bit higher, and hopefully they'll get to that point. But the other services up to this point are making great strides and have a good number of women flying, so it's fantastic.
Well, thank you for trailblazing it there, because the reason why I bring it up, I just remember going through then and just the debates going on at the time back and forth, and they were pretty heated and passionate at times. And to your point, like you said, I mean, for some, it wasn't so less about, I mean, of course, like you said, the plane doesn't know the difference. I think what I saw a lot of people arguing about was the kind of the integration and the traditions and all thing. It was an interesting time. So again, thank you for being the trailblazer, and I'm sure it's helped shape your leadership philosophy even today. I mean, some of the lessons that you had early on.
Oh, absolutely. And to be clear, it was my honor and certainly a privilege to serve. I was blessed with being young when I started, so I was able to have a pretty, I was pretty grounded in what I believed and, you know, operating with integrity and just the desire to get better and to be a part of something greater than myself. And to be able to give back and to serve your country is an amazing thing. It certainly is unfortunate. And I did not expect some of the levels of hostility, again, because of the way I was raised, in that, you know, it was just you go out and you work hard and you show up and you do a good job. And it doesn't matter if you're male or female or what color your skin is or anything. You just work hard and do a good job. So the rest of it felt like oftentimes a big distraction.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate at times. And I addressed some of that definitely in my book, some of the challenges and some of those barriers. But no different than what a lot of people go through. The path to success or the path to something different is never going to be easy.
Exactly.
And for all of us, I think, you know, where we want that easy button or we want to be able to say, yeah, but I really want this, is that you need to definitely, you know, there are times that you're going to have to really dig deep and find that place inside of yourself where nothing is impossible, and that you work with extreme focus and you're very intentional and not afraid to do the hard work. And that's where the magic starts to happen. But yeah. It's not easy. And people, you know, oftentimes, like I said, they want that easy button. Well, just give me the easy answers. And what I try to share in my book is understanding that for each of us to be more fearless and to really get started on a path of changing our mindsets a little bit, it's really a guide to show you how to do that, where to get started, so that you can really stand up and excel in situations that would provoke fear in anyone, whether you're a fighter jet pilot, or you're an executive, or you're just trying to get started and get your feet out, you know, underneath you and figure out, gosh, I don't even know where to go. So whether you're a newbie or a pro, hopefully there'll be some good things in here that'll help you out with that.
You know, we were talking a little bit before the interview, we started the recording here, and you know, some of these milestones that have kind of brought us to the point and brought you to the point where you're at today. And I've talked about on this show a lot how much aviation, my experience in the military as an officer, and particularly flying aircraft, how that has translated into success in all aspects of the life. And again, I like to share it as you do, that it's not so much the monkey skills of flying the airplane that I'm talking about here. I'm talking about the mindset, and you were touching on it here just a second ago about this ability to work through fear, ability to work through uncertainty, the ability to be tenacious. You know, you're talking a lot about courage, and I guess what I want to hear your perspective is much like I've shared with my listeners on this show, is like that whole act of flying airplanes, being an officer in the military, set the stage for me to understood what courage was all about. Did you have that same experience? I mean, it really hit home when I got away from it. Did the same thing happen to you when you got out of the Navy?
Oh. Yeah, absolutely. And I think even certainly going through it, it was a constant trial. And understanding that on a day-to-day basis, how do you confront those fears? How do you become better? Because everything about naval aviation is about that quest for excellence,
right,
and getting better all of the time, never resting on your laurels. And that ability to work through your fears and do what needs to be done in spite of that fear is certainly what kept me alive as I operated in some really dangerous conditions at life or death situations sometimes. But it's also what allows each one of us to get better individually and overcome those challenges, because you know that it's those little steps forward that will make you better. And it's having that courage. It's being able to, what I like to share is this idea of, if you want to get better, you need to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And
that's the
bottom line. If you are not willing to do that, or you say, you look back and go, yeah, but no. You know, just like sometimes I say to my kids, there's some things in life where there are no yeah, but. And the topic, you know, this idea of courage, I don't think really gets enough attention. Oftentimes we think it's just, an absence of fear of, oh, I could never do that.
Yes.
I would be so afraid. No, it's about managing and mastering that fear and that discomfort and feeling it and going for it anyway. And the most successful people that I've worked with, whether it was in the military or now in the decades since in corporate America, the most successful people are the ones that have that kind of courage that make people kind of scratch their heads and go, wow, I can't believe you did that. So it's being willing to go after something and fail and to get right back up, to get back into the cockpit, to get back up on step, and then do it again and do it again and do it again. So feeling that fear and going for it anyway is really the basis of having, I think, true courage.
Yeah, I can't emphasize that. I love that you said so many great things and so many things that have even happened in conversations I've had
with some great people even the last week, but what you said, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. I think we spend so many times, or at least going into, I know I did, even early, my initial thoughts of courage of what you just said there, it was, and I looked at these people in awe thinking, wow, how could they do this without being afraid? And the reality is you're always going to be afraid. And the successful people, like you said, they look at the fear as a gift, actually, and they get comfortable with it. And they understand that, okay, this is the feeling, much like I'm sure as you're getting ready to do a cat shot on the carry of the deck. I mean, you know, I'm sure, I would imagine you were nervous or there were butterflies almost every time you were doing it, wasn't it? Much like a performer getting ready to go on a stage, that never really goes away, does it? I mean, but it's a good thing. It's a gift, right?
It is a good thing, and it doesn't go away. I like to kind of tell people, if you're not pushing yourself every day a little bit further, if you don't have that feeling of discomfort either in your stomach where you've got butterflies in your stomach or where I say a little bit of verp in your throat, you know, kind
yeah,
of that
right,
half
right.
vomit, half burp.
Right.
I know it's really politically correct. But it's that pushing yourself to the limit because, you know, it's, most of the time, whatever you're feeling, it's that fear is telling you, you know, kind of a BS story, and you start thinking to yourself all the reasons and all the rationale of why this isn't going to be effective, of I'm not sure I'm ready, or I think it's too soon, or, well, I still have some growing to do, right?
And people right.
say, well, I think I need one more position
right.
before
right.
I take that next leap. And everyone has his or her own personal doubts and fears to face. But the key is going to be recognizing them and then going back and going, okay, what's good enough? Am I prepared enough? And why not you? Because if you start off asking kind of every question of, I wonder if, then you start going, okay, well, what's the worst case scenario for this? And as you know, as an aviator, people think that we lived at the outer edges of the envelope all the time. And we actually did, but we're also professional risk managers, and we want to put in enough legwork to know that we've tried to negate or identify anything that could go wrong, and then we take action.
Right.
Right? Because the prospect of failing is never fun. I mean, it's not like I want to fail or you want to fail, but what we do is, in order to risk not failing, more people opt out of doing anything.
Yes.
Because they don't want to be vulnerable. They don't want to find out that they weren't good enough. But what kind of life is that? Right?
Right.
But
it's mediocre.
Now you're not. Yeah, it is. And you never know how good you can be or how far you can go or what you could have learned through that failure where all of a sudden you bounce back and you try again. So oftentimes, this fear of failure and this fear of vulnerability gets in our way, and it's all about having these really limiting beliefs of how much we believe we can achieve and whether or not if we fail, oh, that's going to be the end of me. Like, we go catastrophic right away, when 99.9% of the time, that's not actually the truth. When you don't do as well as you thought you were going to do at something, as long as you're able to gain a lesson learned from that, then you can move forward and you'll be stronger and better because of it, not worse off. So it's these belief systems that we end up battling inside of our own head of whether we think we can succeed, or where most aviators know and understand that you are not going to be good at everything all the time, which is why we take the time to debrief with each other and we continually learn. And that constant learning and the continual improvement is what then drives a product of excellence.
Yeah, no, well said.
Yeah.
Yeah, well said. I think that, you know, in pursuing that, if I can call it a myth, I guess, of, well, it's just not in my makeup. I just, you know, I want things to be safe. I want things to be, in what you're doing is you're feeding, letting that limiting belief kind of feed your life and your decisions. And the reality is you can fail. I mean, that myth of safety is exactly what it is, a myth. I mean, you can fail mm-hmm. just as miserably at something mediocre as you could at doing something great or something that you don't think is even possible. So why don't you even, you might as well try for the moon, if you will.
Absolutely. And that's understanding. So part of that first step in being able to do that is understanding that we all have these limiting
yes.
beliefs, and that, but it's choosing that path and understanding that you either have that perspective that what you do, and by the way you learn can shape your ability to change an outcome, or it's the opposite of that, is that defeatist attitude of, well, I'm never going to be good enough, or I'm not going to be able to do that anyway. And what happens is it really shackles our growth, and we're not able to achieve because we have this misperception and these goofy limiting beliefs that we have hold us hostage, and we're never able to reach our potential because we're too afraid. We think, well, I'm not good enough. I don't have that skill set. I could never do what you do. Well, nobody starts off doing anything well. But it's the ability to persist and that belief that you can grow and you can adapt and you can develop your abilities and get better that profoundly affects the way you lead your life.
Yes.
That you're not stuck, that you're not never going to be able to do that. You know, it's those two different belief systems. And as soon as you recognize which group you fall into, and it doesn't mean you're stuck in one or the other. I mean, there are certainly times that I have self-doubt. I mean, even as I was writing this book, you know, you feel like, what gives me the right to write a book? Why would anybody be yep. interested in anything I have to say? I'm not a quote writer.
Right.
Right. Because you don't think of yourself that way. And then you're like, hey, you know, snap out of it. People who write are writers, and hopefully you will write a really good book. But in order to do that, you actually need to sit down and write.
Right.
So it's just those different belief systems that you have to be challenging all the time to grow and get better.
You know, that negative self-talk is so prevalent, and this has probably been, and I know I've shared this a couple times on this show, is that has probably been the biggest lesson of doing all these, having all these conversations. And no matter who it is, no matter how successful, even Steve Forbes even said that he wakes up even now today and has to battle those limiting self-beliefs. And you would think, really?
Uh-huh.
Steve Forbes? So yeah, well, everybody has
those. Yeah, I heard a story not 6 months ago or so. Oh my gosh. Of course, wouldn't you know it, right now it's escaping me. It's one of the guys who was one of the big writers on Seinfeld. Oh, for the love of Pete, I can't remember who it is. Anyway, he was talking about he was being honored. He flew out from L.A. to Boston and was being honored in front of the whole stadium. Hey, you did such great work, blah, blah, blah. Yay, he's a hero to 40,000 people. Great night. Walking out through the parking lot, and one guy yells at him and says, you know, something really negative, and what gives you the right? You're terrible. I always hated that show anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And he said the whole way home, but all he could think of was the one negative thing, not the 50,000 people who stood
right.
on their feet and cheered and clapped for him, but the one negative guy. And he's like, why didn't you like what I wrote? What was he? Why was he so hostile? Why did he say that? So, or no matter what level of success you reach, you're always going to have either people who don't agree with you, say you're not cut out for something. You know, there'll be the negative influencers in your life, if you will. And we all battle some of that negative messaging, without a doubt, but it's the ability to keep working through that and keep adopting an optimistic attitude, and choosing that is what will make the difference as you step up to challenges. And it has to be a choice, and it's not easy a lot of the time, but you have a choice. You can either choose to step up, or you can choose not to. And people think, well, maybe not yet, but understand very clearly, choosing not to is still making
a choice. That's right.
Right?
Absolutely.
So
right.
It's about, you know, I talk about that even with risk taking. People say, well, I can't take that risk. And I'm like, well, just be very clear and understand that not taking a risk is still taking a risk, because now you're letting somebody else direct the course of your life and what's going to happen to you, instead of you hopping in and trying to drive what I call drive the fight, right?
Right.
Drive the decisions, drive the trajectory. Doesn't mean it's going to end up exactly where you thought it would be, but at least somebody else is not making those decisions for you. And that's part of having, you know, that's part of having that courage and being fearless.
Hey, halfway through the show, I want to take some time out, just a brief moment, to talk about my partners at 99 Designs. You know, if you were like me in the beginning, I remember I was dreaming of a logo, a perfect website design, but I didn't know how to get started. I was worried about a budget. Well, that's where 99 Designs came in, and they can certainly help. 99 Designs is the world's largest graphic design marketplace, and it makes it easy for you to get a design that you love. Just go to their website, tell them about the design you need, and pick a price package that works for you. And that's where the fun really starts up. And this is what I loved about the process. Designers from all around the world will submit awesome designs, and you give them your feedback. And within a week, you get to pick out your favorite and be the proud owner of a gorgeous, unique new design. With thousands of designers at your fingertips, there's no limit to what you can get designed. I've used 99 Designs, and I love working with them and what they did for me. So what is it that you need? You can boost your brand's visibility with a t-shirt, drive more traffic with a sleek new banner ad or a landing page, whatever it is you need. Projects start at just $199, and your happiness is always 100% guaranteed. Visit 99designs.com/leadership, and you can get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free today. Go check them out.
I love it in your book, and we're talking about here is courage piece is the 22nd sprint. And the other part that you're talking about that you've mentioned here a few times and tenacity is a 5-hour marathon. That's how you put it in your book. Now, that's a great way to look at it, because I think what we were talking about in the courage, like, you know, why not me? Because we're battling those limiting beliefs and the self-doubt, and we're like, I can't write a book, or I can't, you know, why should I get offered that position? I wouldn't be good at it. Once you make the courage to say, why not me, and you take the leap, the next part of it is having the tenacity to keep carrying on. And I know aviation was a big part in your world to keep it going, especially when it doesn't seem like, because once you take that leap and it doesn't turn out like you thought, the tendency is, see, I knew it wouldn't work, and then you stop and you're stuck in stagnation again. So talk to me about tenacity.
Right. Well, it's so critical, and certainly a big part of the fearless leadership, both in my book, but this aspect of being tenacious, that it's not just a one-and-done issue, that you need to be ready and be willing to work really, really hard. You and I chatted earlier about I was a rower at the University of Wisconsin, and you rowed as well, and that actually set me up for a really good foundation of being able to get through hours and hours and, I mean, thousands of hours of excruciating training, but for the sake of something. And this idea of being tenacious, at times, you need to be able to be willing to put in the work and do the work that other people aren't willing to do. Oftentimes, hear people say, oh, I'm really committed to the success of this. But then when their commitment is really tested, it's, you know, that commitment and that discipline is being able to do that work even when you don't feel like doing it, even when it's not convenient, and being able to really stay focused on what it is that matters and dig deep and keep working. Part of this is being able to wrap some of this up into a focusing on what matters and for the sake of what. Because I am not, I've got, as you do, I've got 4 kids. I'm married, and, you know, certainly try to keep that going as well. So for me, having really clear priorities and focusing on the things that matter is critical for me. But it also means that I need to be able to, when I do work, be able to work really hard and gut your way through those really challenging times. Because that's what's going to eventually set you apart from others, is being able to do the work that other people are not willing to do, and to work harder than they are. And that's a bit of a gut check sometimes, because it tests, when you say you want something, how bad do you really want it? I mean, if I had a nickel, as I finished my book right now, if I had a nickel for every time that somebody came up to me and said, oh yeah, I've always wanted to really write a book. I really want to do that. Well, all of my kids would be driving Teslas, you know? But it's being able to strap yourself into a chair with duct tape sometimes and do the work that's required. So that's part of being tenacious for sure.
Yeah, I think every one of my mentors those that I've looked up to and those that have coached me and guided me and every single one of them had said the only difference between me and this other person, it's not so much talent, it's just the ability not to give up. Because, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not so much that they're smarter or luckier. It's just like, I just didn't quit. And even when it all looked as all was lost. And I mean, there's just so many amazing stories of people just in tons of, you know, facing bankruptcy and all kinds of debtors, and it just looked bleak as all can be. And they said, I'm still breathing. I can still stand up and walk. I still got my mental capacities. The fight's not over. And it's a choice.
Go ahead.
I was just saying that's a choice, you know, and like you said, I mean, and that should give you, it doesn't mean that it's easy and doesn't mean it's not going to be painful, but we do have the choice, right? I mean, and that should give us, or it should liberate us from feeling like we have to keep our life. We're one decision away from making our life dramatically different, good or bad. One decision away. And that's the way to look at it.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And it's in those moments of a hesitation and inaction that we are the most prone to giving up, and we're the most fearful. But when you train yourself, and it is about training, and it's about that mindset, but when you train yourself to take that initiative in demanding or frustrating or really challenging situations, when you teach yourself to just do it, then you're a step ahead of everybody else, because the difference between who you are and who you want to be is what you do. It's the choices that you make every day. And you may not like what you have to do in order to get to where you want to be, because it's not going to be easy. It won't be pretty. But to be successful, you have to be willing to take action when and where others choose not to. Oh. And you have that opportunity to do that. You just need to realize you need to step up and take action.
You know, one thing you do really well in your book, in the last chapter, you talk, and it ties into what we're talking about here. I think a lot of us and a lot of the leadership masterminds, we talk about adversity. We talk about, because that's one thing all of us, every single one of us have in common. We're going to face some difficult times, whether we like it or not, or whether we know it or not. Something bad is going to happen. There's going to be a setback. Another shoe is going to drop that you weren't expecting. And the more that I study this, and you write about this so well in your last chapter, that really is the differentiator between, and I know we try to impart this on our kids, I know you do and I do, we were talking about this, is like, how do you deal with that shoe that finally does drop and you weren't expecting it? And you talk about in your book how adversity really reveals or introduces you to yourself. And that's so true, right? And so talk to me about kind of your mindset and why resiliency is such a critical capacity of fearless leadership.
Right. So I think it's one of the critical foundational elements, if you will, of being a really good, solid, fearless leader, because being resilient is really that ability to recover and adapt and grow in the face of whatever challenges or stressors that are going to be thrown at you. And it's what being resilient and having resiliency is what's going to be required of you when you're faced with really major life-changing circumstances. And oftentimes, you generally, as you said, you don't see these things coming. It's the thing that, you know, that T-bones you, that completely catches you by surprise or fundamentally changes your life that you feel like you will never be able to recover from. And whether that's divorce or physical trauma or something having to do with your professional life, this is where we need to have those skill sets to be able to dig deep and recover and come out the other end even stronger than when whatever that crucible is that happens to us happens. Because oftentimes when people lack resiliency, they're dragged into this abyss. And if there's one guarantee that I can make, and I don't make many, giving up is the only way that you're never going to achieve your dream or achieve success. So having some resiliency skills will be critical moving forward. And I certainly go through some of those things in my book, and how to get and how to build a little more resiliency into your life. But generally speaking, you know, it's this idea of how do you reject victimhood? How do you embrace the change of whatever's happened to you? Really trying to focus on what matters. Finding a great wingman, finding that emotional support, people that you can count on. And one of the critical things, and where we lose so much of our lifetime is understanding what you control, or what you and I probably refer to professionally as your span of control. Because so much of what we worry about happening, or how am I ever going to make this through, we actually are limited by what we think we can change, affect the change on. So understanding that span of control, and then learning, right? Learning from what happens. And then at the end of the day, what's the fastest way to move through that and to maintain resiliency is to look forward and start taking action. Try to drive what your new future is going to be, doing specific things that can lead to a more positive outcome. And again, these are those foundational elements, because again, if I'm saying that part of resiliency is about taking action and understanding how to look forward, what does that go back to? That even wraps into the courage and the tenacity of taking that breath, feeling the fear, and going for it anyway. Right?
Right.
So the people who are most resilient are the ones who can do that continually, no matter how bad things get or how well things are going.
Well, you know, it's so true. I mean, I think that I had a great conversation with Dani Shapiro. We talked about this. She's an author, and her whole book called Devotion is about this exact topic that you're talking about, is how do you succeed in life? You know, for the better part of her life, she was constantly waiting for the veil to drop, the other shoe to drop. She was constantly worried about her kid being sick, and it was just time consuming. And how do you enjoy life when you're constantly worried about the other shoe dropping? And instead, she says, what do you do? And it's all about doing. It's all about action. Because in taking action, knowing that the shoe is going to drop at some point, you don't know when, but the more action that you do, the more that you create, the more that you fulfill your purpose, the more that, as you put in your book, the embrace to change, thorns and all, right? And find that great wingman. That's really what life is about. And you never know where it's going to lead you. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't end up where you initially thought. But that doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing, you know? And being present in the actual moment, embracing what has happened, doesn't mean that it's not going to hurt, and doesn't mean that you're not going to face disappointment. But the life is going to go on regardless. And so you might as well, since it is, you might as well go along with it, I guess, is kind of what I get out of this last chapter in your book.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the only thing that will make a difference or will start to drive change is if you go out and you start taking some bold action.
Right.
Sitting around just wishing for something to be better, or I really want, you know, would like for this to happen, and dreaming for a better future, sure, it all needs to start somewhere. But it's not magically going to happen then. You need to be very intentional and be tenacious and be resilient when you get off track. But really make the choice to take bold, fearless action. That's the difference between creating the life or the organization that you want and just settling.
Yes.
And none of us want to just settle. There's no fun in that, right?
No.
We want to go out and go for it. We're only here for a little bit. Like we were talking about a little bit earlier before we started this call, it's about taking some bigger risks, risking more, and not settling. Just go out there and take the initiatives and grab life by the horns. It'll work out.
I agree. Well, Carrie, the book looks fantastic. I'm excited for it to hit the streets. Like I said, this resonates with me, obviously, because we come from the same tribe, the same background, even though you're in the Navy. But you came from, like I said, the good pedigree with your father being, and he was also flew the same plane that I flew, so he was a good man.
There we go.
And then you're married,
yeah.
And you married a Marine too, so you're not too bad.
Did.
You made some good decisions.
So I should kind of like be a Marine by proxy, maybe.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for having me on with you today.
Oh, my gosh,
it's been so
fun.
I enjoyed our conversation, and hopefully, you guys will get a little bit out of this.
Oh, absolutely. I think, the book is great. And how can people get in touch with you? Give a quick shout-out where people can find you on the web and when to expect the book.
Yeah.
When's the book coming? And when the book comes out, too?
So the book comes out. The official pub date is October 7th, 2014. It certainly is available for pre-order right now. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, support your local independent bookseller. They can give it to you as well. You can find me on the web at www.carrielorenz.com, which is CareyLorenz.com, and Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn as well, but my Twitter handle is Carrie Lorenz. So as an aviator, you can probably appreciate it. We just keep it simple. So,
awesome.
Just my name.
I didn't ask this. What was your call sign, by the way?
Oh, it was Vixen. I actually had several call signs. I had Ralph for a little bit. I had Charlie for just a little bit. Tater as well, but Vixen is the one that stuck. But it's not too. It sounds like it's more of a two beer story. But there's just one X in my call sign, not two X's.
Very good.
It's more funny. We'll leave that for another podcast.
That's good. Well, that's a cool call sign. So that's better. Mine was Ned. Mine was Ned. So it's. Vixen's a lot cooler than Ned, so.
Oh, Ned is pretty good. Well, and you should, you know, full disclosure, remember, we don't get to pick our call signs.
That's right. They're given to you.
Right.
Yeah. Woe is the one that says, this is my call sign. Oh, yeah. Over for them.
Yeah. It's definitely not going to be that then. You come in with something like Wolfman or,
right.
Something mean. And it's going to be different. It's going to be potato sack or something funny. So anyway, we digress.
All right, Carrie, so much pleasure having you on the show, and I look forward to need to have you come back because there's a lot of things I'd like to talk to you about, but thanks for coming on the show, and I'm glad to have met you.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
All right, talk to you soon.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.